podde tillbaks igen. Linus på baslinjen. Ja, han är tillbaka igen. Linus på baslinjen.
Welcome to a new episode of Linus på baslinjen podcast. Today together with Lisa Dotson, the inventor and founder of the Servmaster. Lisa Dotson, born in New York, have almost 50 years of experience from coaching. In addition to a professional career, after she graduated from University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Lisa is still coaching tennis in New York and have previously been the director of tennis at many different clubs in California, Florida, and New York. After an injury in 2009, Lisa developed her tennis serve training tool, and after 18 months of development, research, and work, the ServeMaster was on the market. In this episode, we talk about the serve and volley game style, how to teach the serve and the importance of the right grip, the idea behind the ServeMaster, and we talk about why it's good to use different tools to teach right technique. And we also get into Lisa's new tool to be released, the ToSMaster. A great episode, and it's always interesting to hear people talk about something they're really passionate about, which Lisa is in the serve. So please welcome Lisa Dotson. Now I'm sitting here with Lisa Dotson. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. I'm so happy to be here.
It's super fun to have you here. Lisa, can you briefly start with a short introduction about yourself and your background in the world of tennis?
Well, okay, that might take a while, but I'll try and narrow it down. So long story short, started playing as a kid, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old, youngest in the family, dragged onto the tennis court. I just loved it. And I played every sport under the sun through high school, even into college. I played college tennis for the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And then I thought my tennis was kind of done, but I got the opportunity. Somebody came and said to me, listen, why aren't you playing? Why didn't you ever try and play on the tour? I'm like, well, I didn't have the money. I didn't think I was good enough. And they said, well, I'll give you the money and you are good enough. So go to this coach for a while. And, you know, from sort of a self-made tennis pro, when I was growing up, I didn't really have a lot of lessons and stuff, but I'm just a really good athlete and I'm a really good copier. So I was able to copy what people looked like. Mm. And so from a self-made tennis player, I got in the 200s in the world on the WTA and lower in doubles. I was actually a much better doubles player because I was a serve and volleyer. Okay. I'm 5'11", really long limbs, mm-hmm. volley really well, had a big serve, I had a varied serve. And so that's sort of my playing history. And I started teaching when I was 16 for summer jobs. Mm-hmm. And so I've basically been teaching for more than 50 years, and right about 50 years, sadly. I'm kind of all over the map with it from, teaching. I've taught every kind of kids group, every age, every level. I've worked with touring pros. Really my favorite thing to do is working with I don't know what your rating system over there, but let's say advanced beginner to low intermediate type of players, women in particular. I like to work with guys too, but women in particular, because I think they understand a woman pro better than they're going to understand lots of times a man pro, only because I can relate to, because I'm a woman, better to maybe how they perceive things and how much I can push them and all of those types of things. Mm-hmm. I really just love it, because when I get a core group of women that really want to learn how to play, then mm-hmm. it's really fun. You know, it's not so fun to just kind of, go through the motions and know that, limit them in my mind. We have a great time together, and that's sort of my favorite thing to do now. Uh-huh. teaching. I moved back to New York and I'm from New York originally. I lived in California for about 25 years, where I had a, you know, a teaching career out there and a director of tennis position, and then moved back to New York to help out with my mom. She's now 93, still alive and doing well. And I was working at a club in a town called Rye, New York, which is outside of Manhattan, in a seasonal position, which runs from April to mid-September because we get fall and severe winters here. And so it's a very fast 5-month season that is just like action packed. I've got lots of pros. I've got junior pros. I've got a pro shop and a staff, and I run the 650 members at the club, families at the club. So there's a lot to do, and it's a very demanding job. I did that for 8 years, coached everybody from 4-year-olds to, you know, an 89-year-old. And that was all sort of recreational tennis, you know, fun country club tennis. I'm really not doing any sort of high performance or high level coaching at this point in time, which is fine for me. I just like to be around people who love to play tennis and they want to get better. I don't necessarily have to be doing it at a high level. And now I've stopped doing that. And I'm working on Surfmaster, mostly on Surfmaster and my new product called Tossmaster, will be out hopefully in the next 6 months.
Yeah, cool. We will get into that and talk more about the Surfmaster and Tossmaster. But I'm thinking, like you said, you were playing serve and volley as a player yourself. Do you think there will be more serve and volley players in the future in the women's tennis?
I advocate it. I think it's definitely for doubles. You watch mostly women's doubles as they stand back and they play singles in the back from the backcourt.
Exactly.
But I think it's starting to change a little bit. And I've been clamoring for women to learn to serve better, even on the professional level, for years, because I honestly just think that coaches and pros limit them because they put them on the baseline and say, listen, go back here and just do really well back here. You got to dominate from here. And we know that's really important, but I'm an advocate of getting cheap points where you don't have to have a 10 or 12 ball rally. And women are perfectly capable of hitting big serves and hitting kick serves, but nobody teaches them. They don't teach them properly how to do it, and they don't spend enough time at it. And I also think you have to have the right type of personality, the player themselves, to want to invest their time in something that's really going to be difficult for them. But but if they spend the time at it, they can have big serves. Therefore, you know, that bleeds into the volley, because if you're serving and the only thing you have to do with that grip, that particular grip, is serve, you're not going to volley very well, right? You've got to be more familiar, and you're not going to serve very well. You're going to do things better when you have that particular grip, which is for everything except for a topspin forehand, right? Continental grip. Yeah, you're going to hold your hand over. You use it for your backhand. You use it for your volleys. You use it for your serves, for your overheads, all that stuff. And so when they don't learn to serve well with a good grip, it also interferes with learning how to volley well, because they're unaccustomed to the correct grip and learning how to use the spin. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. Do you think the right grip is important from the early start when the kids are like very young as well? Is the grip important to get right?
Yeah, I think it's important, but I don't think you can always get them to use it by any means. You know, I try to. You know, when you're doing a group of recreational little kids, and you just have to figure out which one can actually hit the ball. Right. First, we want them to contact the ball, right? Whatever. Yeah. So we're not going to start them out with an impossible. Otherwise, they're not going to want to play tennis. Our job is to create tennis players, right?
Yeah.
Not necessarily create great tennis players, but to spread the love, right? Create a lot of people who love to play tennis.
Yeah.
And I think so. You're gonna have success. When they have success, they're gonna have fun. When they have fun, they're gonna want to play more. And so you're going to have particular kids that you can do that with, that you can get a grip with. So if you get a group of kids that are, you know, their parents are saying, well, you know, he's done this, 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 and this, and we want him to blah, 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 play tournament tennis or whatever. Yeah, for sure. You have to start them out right away. You have to start them out right away. And a lot of it I do with just short court off of the ground, teaching them to hit underspin off of the ground. So they're hitting backspin. I don't call it slice. I don't know what you guys call the backspin.
We call it mostly slice, I think. But
okay, I'm gonna call it slice because I'm talking with you.
Yeah.
I just don't like slice because then they start chopping, right? Okay. Slicing and dicing. And it's very different from a slice serve because you're hitting a completely different part of the ball. So I call it underspin or backspin.
Okay.
That's the way that the ball is spinning.
Backspin makes sense for me. Yeah.
Backspin. I'll call it backspin then if I can. So I start a lot of it with backspin because they can control the ball better off the ground with that grip and learn to hit backspin. And once they understand that's what that feels like, then we can start to apply it more to a volley.
Okay.
But I think it's critical to at least why, if a kid can lollipop it back and back like this, we don't want to leave them there. As soon as you can, we try and sneak the grip over. I don't believe that you're going to go full on grip for them. I think you can sneak it over. You can incrementally go a little bit and teach them that the racket head has to be out to the side, right? It can't be straight up and down here. And they kind of work themselves into the grip. Some kids are never going to get it. And the ones that really want to play tennis are going to get it.
Yeah.
Because it takes time and it takes persistence and it takes consistency from the coach and it takes them wanting to do it right. Some of them, couldn't pay them $100 to do it because they're too afraid of failing, right? They want success. And all the strings going forward means success to them. An edge going forward and a ball coming doesn't mean success to them, right? Until they get it.
Yeah, I understand. But you have specialized in working with the serve, sort of.
Yeah.
And is it because you were a good server yourself, or was it because you think the stroke itself was so interesting to teach, or what?
I think I don't think it's because I was good at it. I wasn't always good at it. I was always just a really natural athlete and threw very well, you know, just threw a ball very well. Mm-hmm. And so from a kid on, I could just hit the crud out of the ball. I could hit it so hard. And for a girl, that was really unusual. Uh-huh. And, but then I had a really hard time with the nuances with the grip, you know, of using the correct grip and then learning where does my ball toss go for certain serves and all that. So I have to say that I was naturally inclined to the serve, but I didn't understand it. And I think I finally started to understand it more when I was in college. Mm-hmm. And then I was a completely different thing once I got to the professional level. Mm-hmm. And I just loved it. And I saw just how many cheap points I got from it. You know, ball didn't come back or came back softer. And I needed a serve because since I told you that I was sort of a self-made tennis player, I didn't have the coach and the practice partners to spend hours on the court hitting ground strokes and perfecting my ground strokes. Okay. I played a lot of tennis, but I didn't have that background. So I needed to win points fast. Right. I got good enough that I could stay in the backcourt for a while with top world-class players, but I couldn't beat them at their game. So I had to do something that I knew I could win points with and disarm them. So that was what I did. I served and volleyed. So I became very, very, very good at serving, placement, spin, speed, and putting it together with the serve and volley. And then I do think it's a massively interesting stroke because it's so difficult to teach. I think one of the reasons I really like to teach it is because other people don't teach it well at all. And I feel like I can break it down and help people jump in where they are and pick, okay, what's the piece here that's going to help them get better, that's going to lead to the next piece, that's going to lead to the next piece. And to lots of times people look at a serve and they state the obvious. Oh, well, you need to toss your ball higher or you need to move your grip or you need to this or that. And those are not necessarily fixable things at that point in time for that person, right? There's something else that might be getting in the way. For example, if you need your ball toss to go higher, usually that's the tempo issue, right? When you're dropping your, if whatever, whether you're dropping or doing an abbreviated motion, it's a tempo issue with your hit arm. So a lot of times your hit arm is the problem for your toss arm.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
I see. Yeah.
If you're moving too fast, too quickly through here, right through the beginning part. Well, this gets here very fast, and this hand is going to stop here. It's going to stop low. So I'm not going to get my ball toss up. So I feel like I'm good at looking at a serve as a whole, diagnosing it and saying, okay, I think this is where we need to start. These are the issues, but this is a start point for you to be able to build forward to having a better serve. There's no simple fix on a serve, and there's no easy way to start a serve, except for if you use ServeMaster. Honestly, it's the easiest way to that's why I did it. It's the easiest way to learn how to serve, because I don't have to describe anything. I just show them, and then I manipulate people. You know, I'll take their arm and put this, jump in there and put this one back here in the middle of using the ServeMaster. But it teaches them what it feels like.
So that was how the idea to ServeMaster came up for you, or?
Pretty much. I, you know, it's not an original idea as far as, like, when I was a kid, somebody gave me a sock with balls in it and said, use this. And it, for me, it was really natural because it felt just, it felt like throwing, right? It felt like the whole smooth motion of throwing. Yeah. And then, but then there's so much wrong with it. And that's, people look at ServeMaster and go, I don't need that. I have a sock. I'm like, okay, does your sock have a grip? Because everything in tennis is based on a grip. You can get yourself to move through the service motion with the sock and the balls in it. And it's great to feel that. But as soon as you have to put your hand in the right place, that all goes out the window because your hand's not used to what that feels like. Right?
You
know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
And, you know, I can get somebody to go through the motion with a sock and balls in it and then give them a ServeMaster and they'll go, oh, but that grip, that hand, that feels funny. Mm. Well, that's where it needs to go. Okay, we'll start doing that same thing with your grip hand in that place. And then you give them a racket and they go, I can't surf like this. And I said, well, you just did. You just didn't hit a ball, right? And so what gets in the way there is with that grip, it pushes the edge forward of the racket, right? Puts the edge forward going to the ball, and that freaks them out, right? Because they think, my strings have to go like this.
Yeah.
And they are all over the place. So, yeah, I mean, I developed ServeMaster one. I was really badly injured, both of my Achilles, and I was teaching in California, and I had to take a year off. I had some major issues, and I'd always wanted to do a serve product, and I knew nothing about it. I'm a tennis pro, other than making a makeshift sock with balls in it and maybe sewing on a grip or something like that. It's rudimentary. And but I knew it would help because the sock helped me. I figured, okay, well, you know, having a grip is the key thing. And so I, you know, I built this thing in my garage, like you hear about people, success stories of things coming out of people's garage, with a cord and some foam and some weights and this and that. And ended up doing a focus group and having a prototype made. And now I have a full-on product with three sizes. And I just felt like it needed to be done. And I also felt like very, very naive as I was with knowing nothing. Everyone would want one because they would go, oh yeah, so I want a bigger serve and I see how that will work. It's not easy for people to understand intellectually. So I can't tell you how many times I put it in somebody's hand and we go through the motion and they go, oh, now I get it. Oh, this is great. In the beginning, they're looking at it like, I'm not doing that. Because it looks kind of weird, right?
Yeah.
And it's, they don't understand it. They don't understand how that thing can help them. That something that is loose and flexible and weighted can help their serve. Because they don't understand that a service motion is a pattern of movements. It's not toss the ball up in the air and hit it, right?
So you
have to learn what your pattern is, and you have to learn your timing for your pattern with your legs, and what does your toss arm do as this arm's doing. And you don't have to explain it with that. It just, it kind of all, your body's pretty smart. It can figure out what to do to keep it moving and circling around in the back and going up.
And how have the response from other coaches been about the ServeMaster?
Generally, very, very good. Generally, very good. I have to say the American coaches are the least responsive. All the European, all the Nordics, all the everywhere else in the world are like, yeah, give me that. I get it. American coaches, sorry, American coaches, if anyone's listening, I don't know. They get just too stuck in their own way of doing things and don't necessarily put any credence in a tennis tool. They almost look, some of them almost look down at it. Like, I don't need a tool. I'm so good. I can teach how to serve. I'm like, but you'd be so much better if you just didn't talk so much because people don't understand talking. They understand feeling. Right? So American coaches are, I think we're behind a lot of your techniques and a lot of your understanding and more of your playfulness of having fun with things and experimenting. Okay. That doesn't exist here. Okay. You know, unless you find the right person. But in general, I mean, has the USTA put out any world-class players or the top of the world players? No, because they don't promote that stuff. They have their formula and they go along their formula for every player and don't necessarily give the players their independence of what to do. So yeah, generally very well received. I mean, it's I can't really ask for more. It's a very, very successful product because it works. And it took a long time because people didn't understand it. And the more hands it got into, then it's like, oh, cool. I get it. This is what my serve is supposed to feel like. I didn't know it was supposed to feel like that. I thought I tossed it up and hit it, right? You know what I'm talking about.
I understand. So when you work on court with players, and I understand it depends on which kind of player and level, but in general, how do you use it? Do you use it like a warm-up before you start serving or between serves with rackets and balls, or
depends on the player. If I get a very beginner, I don't ever let them hit a serve without learning the motion first with Serve Master. I mean, what's the point? The point is, as from my point of view, as their teacher and their coach and their somebody who's trying to help them, hitting the ball over the net on a serve, that's nothing. Anyone can do that, really. You know, I mean, unless they're highly uncoordinated, then we backtrack even then. But the purpose of me helping somebody is to teach them the most efficient way to do something as quickly and early as possible so that they can get better very quickly, right? And so if we just put the racket in their hand and give them a ball and tell them to then go like this, they're lost. They have no idea what's going on. They have no idea what's going on. And then your typical tennis pro thing is they're going to say, well, watch, I'll show you. And they don't know what they're looking at. They just see this whirl of movements. And we think they can see everything we're doing, right? They don't know. They don't have a clue what they're doing. They just go, well, that looks really good. Yeah, except for they don't know what we're doing. So I always use Serve Master in the beginning for a beginner.
Okay.
I use it all the time in correcting people. Mm-hmm. So if somebody has pretty much everybody, because anyone can benefit from it. Even I've worked with world-class players who you can get a little bit deeper technique when you use it. So for example, let's say they've got a really good serve and they just don't make quite a full drop in the back here, right? Mm-hmm. When they use a Serve Master, it drops. It has to. It's a weighted end that's just going to go down. Mm-hmm. And everyone has kind of gone, oh, I'm dropping it a little bit deeper, aren't I? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when you can feel it that way, you can feel, even though you think you've got a really good serve, you can feel the deficiency, even though it's minuscule. But we know at that level, that much is this much, right? It's huge. Yeah. The little things are the really big things.
Yeah.
And so for them, I use it more for detecting smaller things, right? Mm-hmm. Where they can, maybe it's acceleration, or maybe it's how they decelerate, or things like that. So I use it in mostly as a diagnostic tool to show what needs to be worked on. And as a patterning tool. So if somebody has, they come to me and said, listen, I hate my serve. I need to do something about it. It's just not working. Mm-hmm. And so we just take it from the beginning and I get them to do a service motion the way it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And then we try and mimic that with the actual racket. We try and transfer it to the racket. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways to do that is if you let them put a full hand on the racket after they've used Serve Master and they put their full hand on, they go right back to their old thing 100% of the time. Okay. So I have them put two fingers on the racket and these are down off of the butt of the racket. And so it's really floppy and loose. They've only got two fingers and their thumb on the grip, okay, on the racket. So it becomes sort of like a transition between Servmaster, which is completely loose and whippy and flexible, to, okay, well, this thing is out of control feeling like, because it's, you've got your two fingers on it, it becomes more like they're using Servmaster.
Okay.
And so we make that, start making that transition to feel it. And I have to tell them, you need to trick yourself into not worrying about hitting the ball over and in, because that's not important right now. How you do it is important. And so if your grip has changed and you're doing things the right way, and normally with the flat grip, your ball is going to go straight, right? It'll just travel straight because it doesn't have any spin. Well, now your brain doesn't know, because the grip has changed it and your racket edge is going to be like this. Your goal is to hit the serve over into the other court by letting it spin, right? I'm not going to tell them to hit in the box, because then they fail and they want to quit. So their goal is not to hit it in the box. Their goal is to hit the side screen or the side fence or the next court with their serve a whole bunch of times, so that they know it's okay to let the ball curve and spin.
Okay.
And then we figure out, how do we get it over here? Most of it is just a mental mind shift, right? Your brain, you're going to aim further to the right if you're a righty, because they don't know how to realize that the ball is not traveling straight anymore. They don't realize that it's traveling on a curve. The Servmaster sets all that up, and then we can work on the nuances of the serve.
Interesting. I know that one of the players that have used the Servmaster is Alicia Parks. And she have, if I understand it right, she have tied Venus Williams' record over the fastest recorded serve for a win
at the U.S. Open. At the U.S. Open.
I think 129 miles per hour.
I believe that was it. Yeah.
Do you know how much Alicia have used the Servmaster?
She's been using since she was nine. I met the Parks family. Her dad called me just out of the blue, cold called me, like 11 or 12 years ago now, and was telling me about his daughters. And I'm thinking, oh, here's another parent who thinks their kids are going to be the best in the world. And this, you know, because parents can get a little bit optimistic about their kids' abilities, but he sounded very reasonable and sane. And I just happened to have the opportunity to meet him. I was going to Florida and he was going to be at the same place, happenstance, in Florida. And I met up with him and with Mike and his wife. And I met Alicia and Michaela, who's her sister. Michaela's 2 years older than Alicia.
Okay.
And they were, I believe they're 9 and 11, and the way their dad calls them freaks of nature because of their physique. They're just unbelievable. And at that age, you're looking at two girls who look like miniature Olympic athletes, just all muscle, up like this from the shoulders. He's 6'4". He's an ex-pro basketball player. Alicia's now 6'1". Michaela's stopped growing, I think, at 5'7", something like that. So anyway, I met them. And from the very first day, they started using Servmaster.
Okay.
And have been using it in developing their serves to today. Alicia carries hers and uses it. And she now uses it more for just loosening up rhythm. Mm-hmm. If you look at her serve, she has sort of a lag time in the back. You can't really see what I'm doing, but in the back with her racket hand, it hangs out there a little bit long.
Okay.
That's part of where she gets a lot of her power, because it has to travel so far up to the ball so fast.
Okay.
But she used to have a really long lag time back there. It used to just hang out, and she'd be, the ball would be up there and her racket would be hanging back here. And that helped her work through that, because A, that's really impossible to time if you want to be consistent at all, and B, terrible on your shoulder. Mm-hmm. Right. So she's had that racket hanging there, and then, you know, it's just too much torque on the shoulder. So she uses it all the time. Michaela is now, her sister is now stopped playing professionally, and she's got her master's in marketing, and they have their own business, a clothing line, and all kinds of stuff going on. So
okay,
very cool family.
Yeah, really, really. And I understand that you have been working on a new tool as well with the Toastmaster. Can you describe what that is and how's that
going? As you can tell, I'm a little bit like, I think a little differently than lots of tennis pros. I have my own way of thinking about things. Yeah. And I find that it's really effective once people understand and you take the time to explain and think about it. So Toastmaster was actually supposed to go with Servmaster. My original two products together were called the Total Serve. Because this is all you needed, right? You needed the upper part and you needed the lower, the toss part. Uh-huh. And 10 years later, I'm just putting the second one into production because it's a whole lot harder than you would think, right? To put a product on the market. And so this one, the idea behind this one is it's basically a mat, a 4x6 mat that has graphics on it for, it's got a baseline and it's got the foot positions for a righty and a lefty for the deuce court and the ad court. And it's got the ball toss locations for a flat serve and a kick serve and a slice serve. So they're round circles on the mat where the ball would land if your ball toss was in the right place.
Okay.
So it gives you stance positions, righty, lefty, deuce court, ad court, and all the ball toss locations. So in my experience, people don't understand why their ball toss is supposed to go in a certain place and that it really has to match your grip, right? So people think that the grip is a negotiable thing and it's really not. You can't serve well with a very flat grip, like a forehand grip. Mm-hmm. And so once you get your grip in the right place for what you're trying to do, for me, I'm gonna hold a continental grip for a slice serve. And I'd put my ball toss in a certain place for the slice because you have to hit a certain part of the ball. Mm-hmm. And then for my kick, I'm going to go further that direction away from the forehand so that it sets the edge more. And I'm going to put my ball toss in a slightly different location. Mm-hmm. People don't understand that. So their toss is their toss. And what they've ended up doing is building their motion with their racket and their racket arm off the ball toss that they toss. So they toss the ball up and it goes in front of their nose and out or up over their head. Mm. They're going to figure out a way to accommodate a grip and a way of hitting the ball that accommodates the actual ball toss. Mm. So that seems reverse of what it should be, doesn't it? Yeah. Doesn't it seem like you should have your motion and you put the ball toss in the way of the motion, a way of the racket when it's moving on its path, as opposed to I'm going to do this. And I'm grinding my shoulder to a pulp and I still can't hit it in very well or very hard, or maybe you can, but then you've hit a ceiling, you're limited on what you can do, right? You just don't get better because you can't get better. So my premise on this is that, it's important how you get your ball toss there, but too many pros concentrate on the how-to instead of the where. So maybe I can still do, I can use a straight arm, right? We all say straight arm, your hand, it varies on how people are going to hold the ball and hold their hand, but you're not flipping with the elbow or the wrist, right? We want the hand to finish up high. Those are just your standard things. And so they focus on that over and over and over, which is great. And I know that you need to focus on it, but people still can't get the ball. They don't know where it's supposed to be. So they need a tool, regardless of how you launch it, regardless of how you get it there. I've seen some really awful toss motions, but the people get the ball in the right place and their serve is pretty darn good, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So they need to know when it's up there, when it's up in the sky, up, they're looking up, what does it look like? Where is it actually? Where is it in relationship to me? And you think about the serve, you toss the ball up and you take a snapshot of where the ball is, and most of them arc from, if you're a righty, then most of them arc from right to left. They start on the right and they kind of curve this way. So you've taken the snapshot in your eyes, the ball's on the right and you're going to hit it, but by the time you go to hit it, it's further over to the left.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
I understand. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's because it's arcing. It's going this way.
Yeah.
And we see it here. So I'll say to somebody, your ball toss is too far in front of your nose or in front of your left eye. No, it's not.
So yeah. with this tool, then you can see where the toss is supposed to be and where the ball is supposed to. Yeah.
What does it look like up there?
Mm.
Correlated to where is it going to land?
Yeah, exactly. Interesting.
Right? Because lots of times, what it looks like up there,
it's
not really where you think it is.
No, exactly.
Because it's arcing. Sometimes it arcs back.
Yeah.
Sometimes it arcs left.
Yeah.
Only a few times in my life of teaching have I ever seen somebody who tosses the ball too far to the right as a righty. It doesn't happen, right?
No.
Because the left arm is doing the job, and the left arm makes the ball go. That way.
Exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, you're absolutely right. I got a little bit off path there. It lets you know where you want your ball, where it should be landing.
Yeah.
And then how do we correlate that to how do I get it to this place to get it to go in that place?
When is your goal to make this tool available on the market or release it?
Well, I was hoping it was going to be out already, but I had some setbacks. Now I'm going June 1st, which I think is pretty realistic. Realistic. I'm getting some traction here. So yeah, I need to get it going because it's, I think it's just a really important thing. Again, sort of a cerebral way of thinking of this as opposed to just, I'm going to toss my ball up and see where it lands. Oh, it didn't land on the right place. Well, we have to go deeper into it than that, right? We have to go, okay, well, what do we do?
Yeah.
Is it your right side that's disrupting it? Is it your left?
Mm.
You know, and but at least you have some hard data there. You can say, oh, because most of the time people just don't believe me. Say, your ball is landing too far in front of you, or it's too far to the left, but it's over to the right. Well, it was to the right until it moved to the left, right? So you're not actually seeing it there, but you're not hitting it there.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they go, oh, it is. And then they're finding, oh, if I let it drop, it actually hits me,
exactly.
Right? It hits them, right? Because it's coming back. So it's just a diagnostic tool again. And then I'm figuring people are going to be able to serve and volley off of it.
Yeah.
All kinds of things. It's like interactive. It's a nice, soft, grippy mat that you can serve off of, and the tennis pro can feed the ball, and you can practice serving and volleying. You can practice serving and recovering back, because most people don't do that very well, especially for singles, right? You're going to land in the court, and then you want to back off.
Okay.
I just think it will clear things up for a lot of people who don't understand the.
Yeah.
Why does the toss have to be in this place, and why does my grip have to be in this place, and how do I do it?
Because these two tools are obviously for the serve, but I wonder, like, when you coach, do you use other tools when you work on other ground strokes as well?
I do. I use the Topspin Pro.
Okay.
Phil Hoffmeyer's Phil's is a friend of mine. I think it's a great tool.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great tool because tennis pros, again, we talk about brushing up on the ball and doing all this stuff, and there's nothing more powerful than actually somebody feeling what that is. What does it mean? What does it mean to brush up the ball? And you know, I'll ask somebody, do you know what you're trying to do? Well, I'm trying to like brush up the ball. sort of. But if they can feel it, that's tremendously helpful. And the other one that I use is Billie Jean King's iCoach.
Okay.
It's Lenny Schloss is the owner of that. It's Billie Jean King's iCoach. It's like a, he calls it the ball on a stick. It's on a base, and it's got a flexible arm and a ball, and it goes back and forth. So that's an excellent vision tool.
Okay.
So it helps you focus in on focusing on not picking your head up and looking away as the ball goes to keep your head in place. And it's also a really good rhythmic timing thing, because you're going to hit one ball, it's going to swing back, and you've got a time to your next hit.
Okay.
So it's a repetitive, and all these things are used for use at home. They can be used on the court, but they're great off the court tools, because I kind of think lots of times that's where people get better, where you're not trying to win points.
Yeah, right?
You're actually focusing in on a task and a technique that then you take it and you put it back on the court, and then your body's going to understand it better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I
those
agree.
Are the two. Those are the two the other ones that I use besides my own.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Lisa, we will end with some questions I ask to all my guests here. Mm-hmm. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
What's the biggest waste of time in tennis?
What's the biggest waste of time?
Yeah, when we talk about like coaching, teaching, practicing, what do you think is waste of time?
Just the biggest waste of time? Huh. What level? Are we talking about any level? Just anything?
Yeah, well, any level, yeah.
practicing or playing without a purpose.
Yeah.
So we get two people out there and they're just hitting the ball around.
Mm-hmm.
They just hit the ball around. Right.
Exactly.
That does you absolutely no good whatsoever. So yeah. You always need to practice with a purpose. And that means it doesn't mean you have to do 10 minutes of cross court forehands and 10 minutes of cross court backhands, but you have to learn what cooperative play is. And, and I was working on that with some ladies today because they don't understand that. They all want to go out and win the point. So we're not supposed to win the point. I'm like, no, you're supposed to stand here and do this until you can do it right. And back and forth and back and forth. And if it goes off track, you need to save it, right? You need to do something where you can get it back on track.
Yeah.
So I would say that's a really big time waster.
Okay.
And also another really big time waster is trying to hit the ball too hard, overhitting.
Okay.
It's concentrating on overhitting because I don't believe that you can hit a really hard ball until you have really good technique. You can hit a hard ball, but you're not going to hit it in.
Yeah.
So you work on your technique and the speed and the power comes along with that, with your technique, instead of just bashing the ball. Because then you don't get a sense of how you're really playing the game.
I understand. Because I mean, if you're on an advanced level, I guess racket speed is important though.
Of course, but if you're an advanced level, you've already gone through your techniques.
Okay.
Right. So it's there automatically, and so sure you can hit varying speeds and a big speed, but the lower level players, the recreational players that come out and they're trying to take the cover off of the ball, mostly guys. It's just a big waste of time. It's fun. They love it. And they're going to keep trying it.
Yeah.
And they don't necessarily understand why they can't make it happen more often. But it's a waste of time.
Yeah. Okay. Good answer. Good answer. Lisa, you said you have coached for 50 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
49, I guess now. Do you want to know how old I am? I'm going to be 65 next month. And I started at 16.
Wow, that's early. That's early.
Well, yeah, and of course not full time. I was in high school, but I started teaching in for summer jobs, and then after I graduated from college, it was pretty much tennis.
And I'm thinking like over those years or all these years, how have you changed your style of coaching? Have you changed your style of coaching?
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah, I mean, you got to stay up with the times. I had to stay up with the times as a player because I've also been playing that long. So when I grew up playing, it was, Eastern forehand grip, straight through the ball, and no around here. There was no such thing as topspin. That was just starting to happen. And so by the time I got into college, I had to learn how to hit topspin. I had always had a one-handed backhand anyway, so that was fine. It was my forehand always that was doing the evolving because it changed so much from the flat to the to topspin. So I had to learn to do that. And with every change and thing that came along, I also knew that I needed to decide what I thought was right for me, because the same thing is not always right for everyone.
Yeah.
The same way of hitting a ball.
Yeah.
And so there was some of that deciding, okay, what's good for me. But in the meantime, I had to understand what was happening in the world because I was teaching, and I had to be able to stay up on what are people doing and what do I really think is good for people, right? Mm-hmm. So for example, these days, I think that the forehand is taught really badly. Mm-hmm. It's all about high performance, this and this, and I just don't think a lot of people are capable of it. Right. So, I mean, I can teach a broad range of people. Mm-hmm. I can teach underspin drop shots. I can teach everything, but I'm going to choose carefully who I teach what to. And I'm always going to start with good, solid basics, basic, 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 right? A nice topspin forehand that's not like, you know, a Western forehand, Western. I'm going to teach the underspin or the backspin or the slice volley. I'm going to teach basic solid things that people can branch out from. And I'm finding that too many times people are starting like at the really advanced stuff. I want to hit a lot of topspin. Mm. They don't have a clue. Why am I going to teach them a lot of topspin first when they don't even understand what the concept is?
Do you teach male and female the same way?
You know, I really cater it to tailor it to each player and their athletic ability and what they already do. Right? What do you do now? What do you want to do? What are your goals? Are the goals realistic? So you hit a slice forehand now, but you want to learn hit a topspin forehand. Are you sure you want to do that? Do you know what a commitment that is? I think it's a great idea. It's too bad we didn't start on that earlier, or you didn't with somebody else. But I want you to know it's going to be a big project. So whether that's a male or a female, I don't know. I tailor it to each person, what I think is going to be best for their development as a tennis player to get them where they want to go. And I mean, the good news is that I have the skills, the teaching skills to make those decisions for people. Good decisions, you know, and teach them basics. I mean, I think one of the things that's so undertaught here is like underspin approach, slice approaches, things like that, using that as defense, hitting drop shots. Everyone's just teaching everyone to hit a big power forehand. And maybe that's just more here in the United States because we play a lot on hard courts. I think drop shots and spins and all that stuff are more prevalent in Europe and in different parts of the world.
Yeah, well,
we're not here.
In Sweden, we play on hard court indoor most of the
year. Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah. What do you play outdoor?
Outdoor, we mostly play on clay, though. But it's just 3 months a year, more or less.
Right.
So it's a lot of indoor hard court. We would love to have a longer outdoor season on clay, for example. But I mean, the weather is what it is, unfortunately.
Right. So, right. Yeah. We have that. And just with the varying the size of our country, the, you know, the climates in different places, California, Florida, it's so very different from New York. And so you're going to have different seasons and prevalence of, you know, certain court types in those places. But I don't teach everybody the same. I just have a broad scope of what I can teach and I make decisions for people.
Yeah.
I get them to do it.
last question, Lisa. In Sweden, there's a current discussion about how to get more female into coaching. I think that's a question of, in general, international as well. What's your thoughts about in that subject?
Yeah, it's a big thing over here too.
It's
huge.
Yeah.
It's just really, I think it's difficult. There's a group here now that it's called the WTCA Women's Tennis Coaching Association.
Yeah.
Do you know that one?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yes.
Sarah Stone. She's done a really great job of mobilizing attention for women's tennis and all of that. So I think that's going to be very helpful. Mm. I think the problem with women in tennis is that we just have they're going to have babies, you know, there's how many women are really going to devote their life to teaching tennis the way you kind of need to, if you're really going to do it. Mm. Right. So they maybe play some college tennis and they teach for a few years and get married and have some kids and maybe they go back to teaching later, but it's hard to make a career like that. Right. Mm. You can't really take your kids on the road. Yeah. And it's really, it's just a fact. That's the way our world is, is women are going to have kids and they're responsible mainly for taking care of the family. At least that's what it is here. I know the women over there have babies too. But so I think like for me with my seasonal job, I was the only woman tennis director in, you know, 100-mile radius because I don't have kids. I'm older. And so I don't have, I can dedicate my life to it. I don't have that's just what I did. And it's mostly that I didn't have a family to raise. So I could go on my tennis career. I went through my tennis career my whole life without that. It's an obstacle in a career. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that's what's going to always kind of be there for women. Maybe 20, 30 years from now, we figure out a way to do it. Mm. But I think it's just a reality. But I think we definitely need more women. I'm always trying to get women involved in teaching. I just think it can be hard because of that limitation.
Yeah, probably. But but like you said in the beginning, many women players like to be coached by a women coach. Do you think we will see more players on the WTA tour being coached by women in the future?
I think so. I think the emphasis on more women coaching now, because the jobs were just given to guys. You know, even if the women wanted them, jobs were just given to guys. It's just the way of the world. And now I think people are making more of a concerted effort. I mean, I even think that women coaches could be great for guy players, for male players, because we're going to see stuff that other people are not going to see. The world is different through our eyes than your eyes. And I'm not saying it's better. It's just different.
Yeah.
And, I think there are a lot of women coming off the tour who, and maybe they've gone through their time of having their family, and their family's grown, like Lindsay Davenport, right? Mm. Family's grown. She's coaching. So they, you know, some of these greats, and now they're actually considering it because they're like, yeah, why don't I do that? Right? Whereas it wasn't really so much of an option.
Yeah.
So I definitely think we're going to be seeing more, and we already are seeing more women's coaching.
Yeah.
And I hope we continue to see more and more.
Yeah. We hope so. Lisa, it's been super fun talking to you.
It's been great.
Thank you so much for taking your time and sharing your knowledge.
Well, you're welcome. I really appreciate you inviting me on your show. And, you know, I wish I could speak your language, then I'd watch all of your other podcasts, but I can't really understand. So, I hope this one, that this benefits somebody out there. Maybe they'll learn something and pursue being a better tennis player.
Yeah, we definitely. And we're looking forward to try the Toastmaster in the near.
Yeah. I will let you know. I'll let you know as soon as it's ready.
Hi, my name is August Holmgren. I've traveled and been on camps with EuroElite for 8 years. EuroElite has played a major role in my development as a tennis player and a person, and they work with more than 1,200 other players from Denmark, Sweden, and Norway during the last 20 years. It all starts with the summer camps, and EuroElite offers 8 different summer camps in Denmark and Sweden in 2022. They're high quality camps with 5 days of more than 18 hours of tennis, fitness, theory, and UTR match play with a focus on becoming a better match player. I went to my first summer camp when I was 10, and then my first Tennis Europe tour when I was 11. After the Tennis Europe tours, you go on ITF tours. I've been on pretty much every ITF tour that EuroElite has to offer, twice. EuroElite also focuses on seeing the culture of the places we go. I remember seeing the Great Golden Buddha statue in Thailand and the pyramids in Mexico. Sign up for EuroElite tours and camps because they provide 3 things that are essential for the development as a tennis player: a balanced life, a great environment that both challenges and inspires you, and you learn how to have a disciplined mind. It's as simple as that.
Thank you everyone for listening to this episode. It's always so inspiring to listen to people that gets an idea and turns that idea into reality, just like Lisa have done with the Servmaster. If you want to read more about the Servmaster and maybe get the hands on your own, then you can head to houseofbontin.se. House of Bontin is my partner and they provide the Servmaster in, for example, Sweden. So go there and read more about it and maybe buy your own. Thank you for listening and thanks Lisa for sharing your story. And talk to you later. Bye-bye.